It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Monroeville author David Fanoli has been writing about Pittsburgh sports for some 15 years, but he says that his latest book, Pirates by the Numbers, A Complete Team History of the Bucks by Uniform Number, is one of the most interesting he's worked on. For any of us who have a fascination about players and the numbers they have worn over the years, this is a good read. And David Fanoli is here to talk about his book. David, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you.
I am someone that is kind of a numbers geek when it comes to the Pirates.
Yeah.
I grew up in the 70s, so I can name the numbers of players from that decade and other decades. But, you know, I think when you're a kid, those numbers just stick. Is that part of how we remember players' numbers? Is that how we become enamored with players and their numbers as kids?
Absolutely. I mean, growing up in the 70s, the Pirates were certainly just about as successful as the Steelers and one of the more successful franchises. So we grew up in an era where we idolized these guys. Some of the greats who ever played the game, Clemente, Stargell, Mazeroski, Parker, Oliver came through to Pittsburgh, and these were our heroes. So you certainly identified these numbers, and you know, quite frankly, playing Little League would try to get your favorite Pirates number.
Right, it was a way of identifying with that particular player in Little League. I wore number 14, and that was Pete Rose's number.
There you go.
So I kind of became a fan of Pete Rose because of that. So that's part of how that happens, but. Players who are obviously adults, they become attached to their numbers. Derek Sanderson, the hockey player who played for a lot of different teams after being a two-time Stanley Cup winner with the Boston Bruins,
right,
and wearing number 16, tried to get that number back at another stop that he made along the way and offered the player that he had it $1,000 or something like that if that guy would give him his number to wear. How do you suppose that becomes so important to players?
I would assume just remembering in my Little League days wasn't enough of an athlete to make it past there, but, you just becomes part of you. I mean, it's part of your identity and in baseball and really any sport, I would assume that, that becomes part of their identity and yeah, you got some players who, and you see through the book there, guys wearing plenty of different numbers through their career, but, those who have played the game for long periods of time, it becomes attached to you, and I think almost a good luck symbol for their success going forward in the future.
But do the numbers also reflect status? For example, if you are a baseball player and you're in spring training and they give you number 68, chances are you're not going to make the team. That's just not a typical number for a player. I mean, that doesn't mean you can't wear it, but generally speaking, a guy who's in the starting nine of a Major League Baseball team is not going to be wearing that number out on the field. So how is it that the numbers that we see on the field have become meaningful for one reason or another?
Well, it becomes, players who come out of Puerto Rico, they want to honor their hero, Roberto Clemente. They want to wear the number 21 going forward that way. You know, it starts with that. It starts with, and again, remembering my days down there, it starts with wanting to honor your heroes, and you take it through, your career at that point in time. And yeah, the high numbers. I mean, you look through the history of the game. There are not a lot of good high numbered players who have actually worn a number over 57 or 8 who have played with the Pirates. But and it's true. Pretty much for any major league team. So, yeah, that's a stigma, too, I would assume. Wanting to go down and get the lower numbers as you become more entrenched into the roster.
When did baseball players, when baseball started, players didn't have numbers on their uniforms. When and where and how did that start?
Well, it actually started in the late 20s with the Yankees. Babe Ruth, number 3, Lou Gehrig, number 4, because of their positions in the batting order. As I did some research on it, because I actually do a section in the book where I guesstimate what the great Pirates of the first and second decade of the 20th century would have worn based on that philosophy. The pitchers looked like your best pitcher was 11, your second best pitcher was 12. nobody wore the number 13, and it went up so on, and your bench players would start into it after that. It was weird, as I did the research, the owners of the National League, the Indians, I want to say in 31 became the second team, but the owners of the National League fought this tooth and nail to wear the numbers. Why? I guess just a matter of this is how we always did it. We didn't want to change. So in approximately late May, early June of 1932, I believe the Boston Braves had already committed to wearing them, but the National League declared that we would finally wear these numbers. As soon as you can get them on your back, you would use them in a game. For the Pirates, it was June 30th, 1932, against the Cardinals, a 9-6 win. That day, if you look in the paper, the wearing of numbers is kind of an afterthought. The important thing of that day was it was the first ladies' day at Forbes Field. And that's what was being covered. That was the headline of the day. And nobody kind of looked towards the future, that this iconic move of wearing a number that would, I mean, be one of the most important things we as fans and players would identify with as we went on. This was not considered one of the important things at the time. And as I said, it was something that the owners, for whatever reason, fought going forward.
And it's hard to imagine now the players having uniforms without numbers, because it's just something that's become so much a part of how we identify players and how we remember teams.
Right. I mean, you go down and one of the memorable numbers, one of the tragic numbers in not just Pirate history, but Pittsburgh sports history is the number 21.
Right.
You look at the history of the Pirates alone. There was a pitcher named Ron Nakai. He's famous for being the only man in professional baseball history to strike out 27 batters in a 9-inning game. He actually only had struck out 26, but got the opportunity as a the last thing was the next last batter. The ball got away from the catcher. Guy got to first base, so he got that extra chance to get the 27th strikeout. So, you know, this guy was considered, you know, the next Tyler Glasnow coming up, even more so. Came up to the Pirates, immediately tore his rotator cuff, and his career was done.
Wow.
Then, of course, you had the great Archie Vaughn, who's sent to the Hall of Fame a lot after his career. I believe 85 is when he was elected. But he was one of the greatest shortstops in the history of the game, definitely the second greatest in Pirate history, past Honus Wagner. And he died right after he retired. A friend of his and him were on a boat in a lake in California. Friend went over. Vaughn, who didn't know how to swim, tried to save his friend, and ended up drowning and dying tragically. And of course, Clemente, you know, his first number, the unlucky 13, and then wore 21. And you know, we all know of that certainly tragic end to his life. Penguins, Michel Briere, who was the first Mario Lemieux, the first great French-Canadian star who started his career with the Penguins, has a phenomenal rookie year. Penguins look like, okay, we got an opportunity to go forward and be a great team, and he dies tragically in a car accident after that rookie year. So the only professional, major professional athlete in this city who can wear 21 is a Pittsburgh Steeler.
Yeah, it's amazing how much, and would you want to when you think about
exactly
how much tragedy is associated with just one number worn by players.
Right.
What does researching a book like this look like, and what did a typical day of writing look like over the 3 months that it took for you to put this together?
Boy, I'll tell you what, the reason it was fun was it was with a company called Sports Publishing, Inc. At one point, they still may be, but at one point they were the biggest publisher of sports books. And they did when I did the Pirate Encyclopedia, they were our publishers and gave me the opportunity to do this book. And they gave it in such a basically a format that I could do what I felt and have some fun with it. So they would start out looking in the media guide at the numbers, because if you go to different places, baseballreference.com, Baseball Almanac, you can see three completely different list of numbers of players who wore numbers. So I chose to go with the team official number, because I figure out of the three, they probably had the best at it. So I would go into the media guide. I would basically look at the guys who might have played one or two games, did some research on them, looking for some stories to try to tell their stories, where you can't do in a normal book about the history of the team, where you have constraints of how you can do this book. Like Bill Bell, who I believe wore the number 20, actually, wore the number 20. One of the few guys in baseball history to have two no-hitters in a season. He did that with the Bristol club at the Pirates, and actually was on the same club as Ron Nakai, who we just talked about, and did it the same year as Ron Nakai had his 27 strikeouts in his no-hitter. You know, it was a chance to give honor to him for his phenomenal performance in the minor leagues, where, you know, he came up and really did nothing. So you would look for players like that, players who served in the war, who might have done nothing in their baseball career, but you know what? They made an incredible contribution to the country. So it was a way to give them honor. And so I would start out, I would look for those stories. There was a guy when I was looking up 17. I would do a number at a time and go up in order. You know, we tell the stories of Doc Ellis, which are
legendary.
I mean, throwing the no hitter on LSD, the day the Pirates fielded the all lineup of color in 1971, the first time in baseball that had been done. Doc was he lasted an inning and a third, was so convinced that the umpires were conspiring against him. He was walking a lot of batters at that point that he kind of flipped out. He got taken out of the game. He took some pills, got on a plane, landed in Los Angeles, and collapsed in Willie Crawford. I'm sure you remember him from the Dodgers, collapsed in his house in Los Angeles. So, I mean, he's the god of 17, but you look down and there was a guy who was 1-for-10 named Grady Wilson. Grady Wilson, of course, the great Sanford and Son, not the same guy, but the same name as the great friend of Fred Sanford. So, you know, looking up that, I thought those were kind of interesting things. And of course, ironically, Grady had a show that rolled off of Sanford and Son, and he lasted only 10 episodes, as Grady Wilson's career lasted only 10 at-bats.
I don't know who else but you would possibly put those things together. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm talking with Monroeville author David Fanoli. He is the author of several books about baseball and other sports. His most recent is Pirates by the Numbers, A Complete Team History of the Bucks by Uniform Number. I'm curious about why this wasn't done sooner. You would think that baseball, which is analyzed in so many different ways, somebody would have written a number about numbers, the origin of numbers, players who wore them, etc. So how did it end up falling in your lap?
Well, Sports Publishing Inc. had done other books about players who players by the numbers. And actually, I was at a Riverhound game earlier in the summer last year. Had some time, went over to the bookstore at Station Square and picked this book up. It was dated. I mean, it was about 5-6 years old, and I was reading through it. And a friend of mine, Chris Fletcher, and myself, we did the Steel City 500 together, and always had been enamored about this. In fact, every so often we think about putting together a book on all Pittsburgh numbers, which hopefully we'll get finished at some point. But I contacted the people, my editor at Sports Publishing, Inc. They had just done my second edition of the Pirate Encyclopedia. And he said, you know what? This is a neat thing we can do. We haven't done this in ages. But, yeah, why don't you do one on the Pirates? And let's put that together. And basically, as I said, gave me the wherewithal to kind of organize it any way I saw fit.
If you were a Pirates player, what number would you want?
Boy, I mean, 21 was always the number I would have growing up as Clemente, but I would take the number 6. Rennie Stennett was my guy in the mid to late 70s. 7-for-7, the first player in the 20th century to have 7 hits in a single game. You know, unfortunately had a nasty leg, one of those leg breaks where you don't want to watch the replays on TV. And when he came back, he wasn't the same player.
But they didn't retire his number because Starling Marte is wearing number six now.
Starling Marte, and actually Starling Marte has a chance to be one of the greats of all time with the Bucks. In fact, even with McCutchen on the team, to me, if somebody asked me who was the most talented player on that team, Marte is hands down.
Is there going to be a time when baseball's not going to be able to retire numbers? Because if you keep retiring them, taking them out of circulation, the Yankees, for example, I think the only – is there a single-digit number left? I think maybe number six on the Yankees your favorite number is the only one left.
I want to say that was when Jeter got his number retired. I want to say that was the one that was left. And quite frankly, I think they're the only ones who have the problem right now. Thinking back in the history of sports – they have the problem. The Boston Celtics have the problem, where if you sneeze five times in a game, they retire your number in Boston. But I think it's a great honor for somebody. I know I've heard the opposite arguments, and as long as you do it judiciously and make sure it's a worthwhile honor. Unlike the Cleveland Cavs, who retired Nate Thurman's number after one season at the end of his career in Cleveland. Where he didn't play necessarily that effectively. To me, that's where it gets out of control when people try to retire numbers just to promote something or get people in the house. But with what the Pirates do, I mean, the Steelers have a great system where they've retired two numbers in the history of the team, but the equipment manager won't give out a number. Like, you haven't seen somebody with the number 12 since Terry Bradshaw retired, or since Todd Seabaugh, who came right after Jack Ham as a linebacker in the late 70s. I don't believe anybody's worn the number 59 since.
It's almost like with some of the great players, the number they wear is as important as the name that goes with it, isn't it?
Sure. I mean, Pete Rose, oftentimes when he promotes things, 14 in a circle is next to Pete Rose. How did we honor Clemente on the right field wall? With 21 in a circle.
And 21,
21 feet high, yeah.
The wall in right is 21 feet high.
Yeah.
Sure. It's a part of the game that we really don't think about, but which obviously our guest, David Fanoli, has taken great interest in, so much so that he's written a new book. It's called Pirates by the Numbers, A Complete Team History of the Bucks by Uniform Number. And he is also the author of books about the Pirates, including the Pirates Encyclopedia. And if you're a football fan, he's also written The Birthplace of Professional Football, Southwestern Pennsylvania. David Fanoli, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.